Greetings, this is Brother Jamal, and you're listening to Inner Light Radio, the healing frequency.
If life is like a box of chocolates,
Life 365 is like a warehouse full of crates overflowing with boxes jammed with chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Choose from thousands of stations, 260 genres, 150 nations. Find your flavor. Then, listen commercial-free with a Live 365 VIP membership. Get a five-day free trial now at live365.com/VIP.
To Romania, and what significance does Romania hold? Because we really don't talk about Romania.
No, it certainly, and I'll try and give my best encapsulation of what's going on. Of course, for those who aren't familiar, David Anderson is the founder and president of the Time Travel Research Center, which once existed on Long Island and no longer does exist on Long Island. There were branch units in Romania, and that's part of why I'm going to Romania, and there was a branch unit in New Mexico, which is still extant to some extent. He doesn't spend any time there that I know of, maybe a little, and the government had co-opted his time travel research center, apparently trying to mess it up, but apparently there have been some breakthroughs there as well, so he's going to brief me on those. I have spoken to him recently, and he'll brief me on those when I get to Romania. He's very reluctant to talk to me about anything until I do get to Romania. Because, you know, there's a lot of prying ears around. Now, when we talk about a catalyst between dimensions, it'd be interesting to give a little bit of context to who he is and who he might be. Because we don't know all of what he is. And we know a lot about who he might be, but I would preface the entire discussion today, which with some information that you haven't heard from me, and stuff that would have just been archived into my mind unless David had sort of surfaced in my life mysteriously on the eve of August 12th in 1999. Now, at a meeting, at a local meeting.
Peter, one second for me. Before you go any further, I hate to do this early in the show, but I have a feeling we may have to take a momentary break. There are a couple of technical difficulties, even though it sounds very clear. So we're going to have to take a momentary break and come right back. And when we come back, Peter Moon is going to continue giving us this amazing insight, but I want to make sure that we can all hear what Peter has to say. So stay tuned, and we will be coming right back.
Thank you.
Well, welcome back to Sovereign Mind, and of course, I'm your host, Sonia Barrett, and we are speaking with Peter Moon of the Montauk Project Experiments in Time, and author of a number of books, including the Montauk Book of the Living. Peter was about to give us some really important information, and I would love for him to pick up where he left off. Hopefully you remember where you left off, Peter.
I remember exactly where I left off, and I'll just want me to continue from there?
Yes, please do.
Okay. I was talking about David Anderson, and I was talking about how, you know, I was giving a preface to how all of this interesting, you know, information surfaced to where that when he came into my life, I took recognition of him in a way that I might not have had I not had the preface I'm about to give you, which was when I began to write the Montauk Project book in the year 1991, Preston Nichols had, you know, told me to go out to Montauk and see it for myself without him or any of his associates, just find one of my own friends and go out there and see what I could see and feel, which I wrote about that experience in Montauk Revisited. And he also took the opportunity to connect me up with Al Bielek, one of the alleged survivors of the Philadelphia experiment, because he wanted Al to tell me information that, you know, I could appreciate and get straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So I took a trip over to Princeton University with Al, and he was trying to verify his earlier existence there, which he came up short, which didn't surprise either one of us, really. And we went to Princeton and met with a couple of his friends over in that area. And on the way over, he began to tell me about the mysterious Anderson family. And I don't know how this came up, but in the Montauk book, there's a caretaker of the Montauk base named George Anderson. And Anderson was the one who let Preston on the base and kind of made it okay. He took him aside when he came to the base and said, if you want this equipment that's here, let me tell you how you can get it. He gave him a number in Army surplus, and Preston was able to eventually acquire it with the sort of tacit permission of Army Surplus and Mr. Anderson. Now, Anderson was just the guy at the guard booth there when Montauk was sort of a defunct installation. And that was the first mention of Anderson. But Al Bielek told me there were a whole bunch of Andersons connected to this Montauk project. They were not negative characters. And then he proceeded to tell me his stories about a couple of brothers. I believe they were twin brothers, if I'm not mistaken, in New Jersey. And he grew up with in Nutley, New Jersey. They were in high school, and they kind of helped him with certain things about his schooling. They kind of overlooked like a big brother, but they were very enigmatic and mysterious, and they were removed from him, but they kind of took an interest in him. And then he was claiming of these wild stories that they had left this Earth for Alpha Centauri through a spaceport in New Hampshire. Now, that sort of stuff is very wild, and I don't necessarily accept it, but I don't reject it either.
Right.
It was just a weird story about the Anderson family, and the twin Andersons were not necessarily related to George Anderson, but he said there was an Anderson family related to George Anderson that was tied to all this strange stuff with regards to Montauk and Alpha Centauri. Now, that was just background information. I never put it in any books because it's just too unverifiable. And then one day, lo and behold, this character comes to one of our meetings, and at the end of the meeting, he tells me that he's David Anderson, and he has a time travel research center in Long Island. Of course, that perked my ears up, because I knew of the Time Travel Research Center on Long Island only because he had subscribed to our newsletter. That's the only reason I knew of it. When I saw the stationery said Time Travel Research Center, I thought this was a kid. I thought this was some high school kid who knew how to put together some graphics. I was not thinking it was a real Time Travel Research Center. But it was, and he had read my newsletters for, you know, a year or so, and he found out about the meeting through a friend of mine. They were chatting on AOL, and she told him about the meeting, and he showed up and told me who he was, and wow, he didn't know we were having the meetings, and I didn't know he was a real person with a substantial scientific background who was investigating time travel. He got to meet both Preston Nichols and myself that night, and he came back for many meetings, and he wanted to take me out to lunch and talk to me and discuss things, and he's very interested in my work. He wanted to find out certain things, and he put up our first website for me, and we piggybacked on his website for a long, long time until he went out of commission in right after 9/11. He was called to a mysterious place in Moscow. He was going to be report to Moscow. This was through the government, apparently. He was told to report to Moscow with his passport and his airline ticket and take nothing else or he wouldn't be able to keep it. And he told me, he called me to his apartment, which I'd never been to before, and hardly anybody had ever been to before, and he says, "You, if I don't come back in 2 weeks like they say, please let me know. Please make a fuss about it because you're the only one that will make a fuss about it or can make a fuss. I don't want to disappear." He had a lot of foreboding because at that time in his life, he was making tremendous breakthroughs with the time travel scenario. Now, when I say breakthroughs, I should explain to your listening audience what he had already accomplished. He was at the Air Force Flight Test Center in the Mojave, not far from where the sound engineer lives, not too far. And he was researching certain mathematical models to help our satellites in orbit because they're going to drift out of orbit every several meters every year or so. They're going to drift, and it's quite a problem. So he started working on a space-time model by which he could warp the time-space field and maintain the position of those satellites. And he was using Einsteinian theories and whatnot. He was very brilliant and gifted in mathematics, a natural in it. And at some point, I don't remember exactly how this occurred, when he left the Air Force, he patented the algorithms which were needed to make this mathematical reality, a mathematical model, a reality. He patented the algorithms, which are, you know, basically just sort of algebraic equations that relate to a graph, or in this case, it would be a three-dimensional model, and I don't even know if it could be called a fourth-dimensional model because I'm not qualified to comment on that. But he patented these mathematical applications, and he, out of that, when he left the Air Force, he developed in his own private industry the Time Travel Research Center, which was essentially a security company which licensed this patented technology to the government so that we could have our satellites maintained in outer space without compromising their orbits. This gave him a good windfall in terms of a financial base to start on other ventures, which one of them was the investigation of time travel itself, because he was doing it on a small model. He was, you know, warping the time-space field of these satellites. Now, he went to apply that in the medical industry, where he was able to attract a lot of investors, because in the medical industry, if you can slow down a heart or a liver for transplantation purposes, it will last indefinitely, so to speak, as opposed to having to have it there quick so you can do a quick transplant while it's still at maximum life capacity. So there was a lot of interest in the medical community. He attracted a lot of investors, a lot of investment, and he was able to create an energy field initially the size of a soccer ball where he could slow and speed up time. So whereas if you were to put in an alarm clock, it would slow down or it would speed up, depending on how you applied it. Exactly how he did this, you can get a clue of it if you look at our website, skybooksusa.com, because he left us his website when he, you know, went under the radar, so to speak. So this is some of the technology that he was doing. Now, on that night that he brought me to his apartment, he was trying to plan a big event on the subject of time travel and have all the physicists from all over the East Coast, Northeast, and perhaps even some bigger names from outside of the Northeast come to this big conference where he wanted to feature the theories presented in the Montauk Project, because he knew there's a lot to what's been written in
right.
my work, and the Montauk Project specifically. He seems to have some strange resonance with the project, although that's, you know, technically speculation at this point. Intuitively, I'm pretty sure there's a lot more to be said about that. But so we talked about the event, and he was excited about doing this event. And, of course, I was happy to do it to promote the work, and, you know, every bit of promotion always helps. So he said there was one problem he was having with his work, and he said it was instrumentation. He says, you know, I'm more of a mathematician. I'm not really an instrument person. And I said, well, I know somebody who's really good in instrumentation. That's his specialty. It's Preston Nichols. You already know him, of course. Yes, he knows him. So, and Preston is a whiz, and people can criticize Preston on many different levels, because people do. But what I'm saying is the one thing they can't, and it's not the only thing they can't criticize, but one of the things they can't criticize is that he is an expert in instrumentation, a genius in instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get the two of them together. I mean, they already know each other. But most of the liaising with David was through me, all of it practically. So he would meet Preston at the meetings. But we were going to get the two of them together, and you say, well, how could we, you know, put together some application here? Now, when that happens, that sends off a lot of flags, because Preston is so monitored by the government that, you know, that's not going to happen. That meeting's not going to happen unless they want it to happen, or
right.
they're too busy with a war somewhere. So I said that was something I was looking forward to, in networking the two of them together. And then what happened is David left, and after 2 weeks went by, I didn't hear anything. I let it ride, and after 3 weeks, I got a call from a female friend of his who was told to contact me if he didn't come back in 3 weeks. So at that point, I started getting on the phone and creating a fuss, and the next thing we knew, a couple days later, we got an email from him saying that he was okay, and not to worry, he'd be back in a couple weeks. He didn't get back, actually, till about late January, mid or late January, and this was like December when we'd spoken to him. It took him a while to get back, but he did get back, and I think at one point, I think there were two emails he sent us. One of them might have been from the Moscow Aviation Institute, but one email, as it turned out, and I had this traced through Joe Matheny, my friend who was an expert in computer science, you know, one of the best in the world, and he had traced the email from coming from an internet service provider in Pakistan. When David got back, he called me and thanked me for helping him do what I did, and that was kind of not the last I ever heard from him, certainly, but pretty much the last I heard from for a long time, because and then I found out through his friend that pressure had been put on him, the government was causing him all these security problems. He did complain to me of his security problems, which I referred him to Joe Matheny, who could help all of his computer security problems, but the security problems were so vicious that he'd been caused to move about two or three times his center in Long Island from people breaking in. And these are what I would determine, it's only my opinion or assessment, is that they were government break-ins, because then the government says, if you come with us, we'll take care of your security problems. Well, that's kind of obvious mm-hmm. who was causing them.
Right.
So he was forced, and from what his friend said, he was, you know, I mean, they threatened to harm his people he loves and whatnot if he didn't comply. And rather than calling them on their bluff, he gave ownership of his research center to, they had a controlling interest. And he still had a financial interest, but And then he complained that they were really messing things up. When I later spoke to him, you know, they were not. And so the meeting with Preston never happened. Although, now that was in 2002, or, you know, 2001 is when I had the meeting with him. 2002 was when the things kind of got messed up. And he ended up moving, working in private industry for in Rochester, New York, for a company called Bosch. Bosch was one of the biggest defense contractors in Germany during World War II and is one of our biggest defense contractors. Their literature portrays them as the good German company during World War II. And there's an argument to be made for that, but I wouldn't believe it too much. But they were a German defense contractor, and they're now one of our bigger defense contractors. And he was working for them in the area of security, had to do with lasers. Now, that I didn't really know at the time. I sort of found out. One of my friends found out because I guess they put him on a website, but he had no public, awareness for a while. And he called me in 2003. First he emailed me, and then he wanted to leave me all of his research books and papers from the Time Travel Research Center because he said he felt safe giving them to me, where they rest in my attic to this day. Most of the stuff were books on physics, stuff you could find in a bookstore or library, maybe some stuff. There were publications in Russian, which you can't read, with a certain amount of art, games. He was going to make a museum of time travel. Most of this stuff is not too valuable to me in terms of being able to research because I don't, you know, going through physics books ain't going to cut it. I could learn more sitting down with him a couple hours in Romania than I'm going to learn in those physics books, which right. is one of the things I hope to take place in Romania this summer in August, only a month away. And he also gave me a couple of journals in there, which I've put for resale. And after years, it took me to dig up this video that he made, the Journeys into Time, which is about his time travel research center, and talking about time travel. Now, that is a DVD. I took the master. It took me years to dig it out. I mean, and I took out the master, and I turned it into a DVD, which we sell on our website and in the Skybooks catalog.
So it is available? It is available.
Yeah, it's an industrial video about the Time Travel Research Center, and it's more emphasis than on the center itself than is on theories of time and how time travel is, you know, yesterday's science fiction, today's reality, because he will talk to you scientifically about time travel. This is it was sort of like a industrial video about his center for people who were interested in investing or people who were just to inform the public. Now, he gave me the rights to that, and that's why I was able to reproduce it. I also sought it out as a very valuable commodity because when I do the Montauk Project documentary, I'm going to pepper it with that scenes from that video and sort of give it more credibility to the whatever credibility the Montauk Project already has. It will give it more feasibility, plausibility, and credibility. And then with a follow-up trip to Romania, that will be included because I intend to take as much footage possible in Romania.
Now, Peter, before you go any further, I want to ask you, because I know that we talk about the time travel and the government, but exactly just how evolved are they in this whole time travel experiment? I mean, is it a matter of them just not wanting anybody else to figure this out, or is it a matter of they have figured out some things and they really have been able to manipulate time? Which one of these aspects is
I will explain to you. Exactly what the government knows and doesn't know is of course going to be a mystery to all of us. My most obvious impression or intuition when I first encountered this problem David's problem, I said, well, obviously he's competition to what they already know on the secret levels. If they didn't, they don't want competition because they've already figured this stuff out. So they don't need him pushing the envelope because he's independent. Now that they have control of his center, you know, they can do anything what they want with it. But this is something that is very interesting aspect. Now, just in the same way he created a space-time model for the... Are you still there?
Yes.
Hello? Okay, because
yes,
I'm getting a call waiting, which I have to ignore, but I'm saying I just want to make sure.
Yeah, no, we're here.
Right.
We're listening intently.
Okay, so just as David created a space-time model for the satellite, the space-time model I would present to you in terms of understanding the government and time travel, as well as our current political crisis with, you know, with oil and all that stuff, is you have to look at the people who... There's a subject in metaphysics called dominion. And when you look in the Kabbalah and the Tarot, it's dominion. What is the dominion of this world? Well, I guess in Christianity, this dominion of this world was the devil. And if you want to get a little more analytical or a more scientific approach to the devil, which means diablo in its root word, you want to look at the concept of the jinn or the genie, which is, you know, the 72 keys of Solomon. And the jinn is just like a jinn used to be a word for like a corral, like to jinn something in. It was like to restrict or reduce something. Now, in mythology, jinns are also reduced into a bottle. They're put into a bottle. So life has been put into a bottle in many respects. And when you touched on the subject of Scientology, that was the whole thesis of L. Ron Hubbard, was that spiritual beings, which he termed Thetans, after the Greek word for life force,
Thetan? Could you spell that just so it's clear?
Theta, theta or Thetan. Thetan was just his word for a spirit, Thetan, Thetan, but it comes from the Greek letter for life force, which is theta. And it basically life force. Now, each spirit, and I will speak in spirit terms rather than Scientology terms so I don't confuse people, but he believed that the spirit was capable of anything and everything under the sun. And, of course, this idea pisses off religionists or certain types of fundamentalists who, you know, all power comes through God, and this sort of puts a spirit on a bit of a co-creatorship with the Godhead, which God means creator anyway. So when you're actually creating spiritual phenomena, you're participating in the act of the Supreme Being. Now, so his theory was that people can, you know, remote view, remote smell, remote think, whatever it is, it's just like they're all powerful, but they have been reduced, and largely they have reduced themselves, but they get help along the way, into a human state where they only use 10% of their brain power, and they've been degraded through many lifetimes of, you know, Holocaust and whatnot, which has been satirized on the South Park TV show, satirized, very effective satirization, but it kind of misses the point that why are human beings and human spirits so lame as compared to the so-called UFOs or aliens that we see, who seem to be not as lame. Far more capable, at least if you believe popular literature and mythology on the subject. So this is a theory. So in trying to understand what your original question about the government is, the concept of jinn, and jinn takes away, you know, all the, it reduces it to the common denominator of the archetype, which, you know, resides in the mind of people. We are reduced in our potentiality. So if you look on a sociological level or a political level, the government and the people, and it's not really the government, it's the people who hire the lobbyists who use the government, they're controlling this planet on a lot of different ways through these various groups, such as the Bohemian Grove, the Illuminati, and whatnot. And they're putting pressure on it for whatever their agenda is, most of which is just to control and restrict life, just as a nut in a cult would want to just siphon off all that life energy or life force from his followers for his own specific agenda, which is based upon insanity. So in the jinn is what's controlling any efforts to break through. Now, if we reference astrology, we're living in a time of awareness and awakening, so these restrictions are coming off. Of course, getting the restrictions coming off, what we're doing right now in this endeavor is we're pushing the issue, we're forcing the issue, and what's apparently happening, Romania seems to be a key. Just as I said, David Anderson was a catalyst, there seems to be a much bigger catalyzation process going on in Romania as well. So I hope I've answered your question.
Yes, you did. Now, I'm going to take it maybe a little bit further. This is going to be based on what you think anyway. But with that said, because you said that to some degree they have figured it out. Now, figuring something out and actually getting it to work can be two different things. So would you say then that there is that possibility that time, as we perceive it, has been tampered with, that it is tampered with on occasion? We're going to deal with the system then, the government, their scientists, those that are hired to do that. Do you believe that that has happened? Have they been able to probably perfect it enough, besides the Philadelphia experiment, but to perfect it enough? Because I know Crowley and Hitler, they were all looking into all of this as well.
Well, I don't think, it's hard to say whether it's been perfected. There are instances, many, recordings of people being abducted where they were taken out of a spot and mysteriously put back in it. Now, that's more on the alien scenario, but this is somebody, these are creatures that were able to manipulate time and space. Now, that's if you take into consideration all these abduction accounts. Now, whether they are the government or whether they are aliens and where the two meet is a great question that could be debated. Obviously, I would say there's parts of the government, if you go into the Social Security office, where there's probably no alien involvement at all. If you go into certain sectors, the lines get very bleary. So I would say the government has some influence by, entities that are not regular people, per se. And there's some areas where they're not. And when it becomes bleary, that's when the radar starts to break down, literally the electromagnetics break down, and there is an other influence at work. What that other influence is could be many different influences, but it's something that we as human beings do not have access to, access denied.
Right. Well,
and this
okay.
is where we're pushing the envelope.
Exactly, we have to. Now, because I think innately in human beings, especially the ones that are more aware than that there is something much bigger outside of the program that most people are fed, there's an innate sense that there is something obviously way beyond our imagination. Now, with all of that you've said, do you think, or is there a possibility then, that there are potentially then people or beings then from the future who have, could probably have incarnated either here or potentially then have come here directly, like direct arrival to the planet? Because we've heard all this sci-fi stuff, we've heard so much stuff about it that I'm just curious as to what your take might be.
Well, better than my take, because, I'm going to give you the take of a personal friend of mine who had a strange encounter with David Anderson in 1975, where she he appeared out of time to her. And mm-hmm. you know, he could have only been about 11 years old at that time, or 10 years old, but he appeared as he did when she met him at our meeting in 1999. She was with me, and she said, it, you know, she said, I can't believe that I've seen this person before. But it took her about a year to tell me, because she was embarrassed or thought that I might think she's nuts or something. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't have thought she was nuts. But she saw him out of time, and she also knows David, and she is friends with him. But the funny thing is, and she's also had many strange experiences of I guess what you say, a paranormal type. And she told me that, you know, she would tell you that he is one of these travelers from the future mm-hmm. that is coming. And as Stephen Hawking, when he first denied time travel, he said that, well, if there were time travel was possible, we would see visitors from the future. And so he says, well, what do you think these, you know, UFOs are, you stupid idiot? And he kind of, you know, didn't make any comment, because he's the most esteemed physicist on the planet. Not the smartest one, but, and he's certainly smart, but, you know, he misses the forest from the trees sometimes.
Right.
So the thing is that, yeah, there would be, if you can do time travel in the future, and if it's a scientific reality, as David says it is, from his research, then it's going to be happening at all times. Now, you might be in the desert where you don't see a car go by very often. And if we pay any attention to L. Ron Hubbard's theories, this place is a desert on the space-time continuum. It is a garbage heap, according to him. Mm-hmm. So if that's true, we've been getting a lot of visits by the garbage people lately, who are interested in it for one reason or another. But in terms of if, and David sent me a provocative postcard, that was a couple years ago, saying there's a, you know, I'll walk to it if I can find it. He was saying there's an exact time and place where, just pardon me half a second as I walk over to my computer and read it to you. He sent this postcard out of the blue. Every once in a while I get a postcard out of him from the blue from China or someplace. And this one was from Bethlehem, the city of David. And it says, hello, Peter. Finishing work here on an interesting project. We need to talk sometime soon. Some things are simply not what they seem. And then he had a series of letters that were crossed out, about four lines that were crossed out in pure gobbledygook English, like, what was that about? And he says, would be great to meet to share thoughts at one of your regular meetings. I hope all is well, your friend in time. And we broke down that code. Actually, it was funny. I put it in my newsletter, sent out the code. And within 24 hours, that newsletter got to Montauk, New York, where one of my readers gave it to her boyfriend, and he decoded it immediately. It wasn't that hard of a decode. And what the decode said was actually a quote from FDR that says, and only it didn't say what FDR said. FDR says, in politics, things, what did he say? In politics, things never happen by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. Well, David said, I think he said, in this world, or in this world. He didn't use the exact quote from FDR. So I sent it to him, and he eventually answered me and said, that coding that I gave you was not the real code. That was a code within a code, because I was sending it through. The mail systems would have picked up the code, and it would have been decoded, the obvious coding, but there was a deeper code within it. I could not break the deeper code. One of my friends sent this to all the top code breakers in the government and whatnot, and nobody could break the code. Mm. When I had a chance to speak with him last month, he said, it's really not that hard. He said, I can't believe anybody couldn't break it. But, of course, I'm not a code breaker, so I'm going to have to wait to hear. He was reluctant to talk about it on the phone because, he'll feel much safer talking to me in Romania for reasons I can only guess, probably no better than you can guess.
Right.
So, he did say, he sent a follow-up email saying that there was information waiting at a predestined point, which he thought I was, you know, already had some awareness of. But to tell you the truth, I don't have that much awareness. That means I have to rely on my intuition. Is what is, you know, it's kind of like a mystery waiting to unfold and resolve. And if for those who have read my books and have researched with me, this is like a great gift I'm being given here, because, you know, when I set out on this journey, I did not expect to meeting somebody like him. Preston's stuff
right.
was like weird and off the wall, not necessarily untrue, but just it was from such a weird quarter where when
right.
David talks to you, he's going to talk in a way that academics have to stand up and appreciate what he has to say when he talks
right.
science.
Right. Wow. Well,
there's another background here that I don't know how much more time we have, but there's another scenario here.
Mm.
How much time do we have?
That's the funny thing. We have probably about 3 minutes. So if you can go ahead and give that point, and then, of course, we're going to, you know, talk about you having to come back with part two, because it seemed like the show was only 5 minutes long. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I can say this. Part of my... Coincidentally, at the same time I'm going to Romania, which I didn't know I was going to be going, I've agreed to publish a Romanian book, which is about a secret hall of records there that's been discovered that's not too far from the Romanian Sphinx. So there's a whole other scenario brimming with mystery that might have nothing to do with David Anderson. So I asked David if he knew these people, and he kind of like, he said, I don't want to talk about this on the phone. And I kind of get the impression that he doesn't know them. And if he doesn't know them, he knows who they are. Or he knows some of them.
Right.
And I was actually able to have an email through different vias with the author of the book. And he said he can't meet with me, but he's going to send me an audio CD because he works for the secret department, the X-Files department, Department Zero, the Romanian government. And he can't meet with me. But so there's a whole... brimming scene going on over there, which we're going to find out. And when I come back, I'm going in August. I can come back and tell you, you know, what I see and what I saw and didn't see.
I would love it. We're going to have to definitely just automatically schedule two parts for that. Well, Peter, would you go ahead and give us your contact information, the website as well?
Certainly. The website is www.skybooksusa.com, just like it sounds, SKYBOOKSUSA.com, SkybooksUSA.com, and there's information on the Time Travel Research Center there, and I will be doing regular updates in my newsletter, the Montauk Pulse, which everybody's welcome to subscribe to, and the next issue, we just published an issue which has a whole bunch of stuff with David in it that I haven't gone into, and we'll have a new issue, and I'll be telling about my trip to Romania. It'll come out about October.
Okay, sounds good. Well, Peter, I really want to thank you for being on the show again this morning. And to our listening audience, thank you for listening in. And please stay tuned and look out for an email or check the website for an update, because I'm going to talk to Peter about finishing up on this subject, hopefully next week. You may contact me as well, Sonia Barr, SONIABARR, @yahoo.com. And you may visit my website at www.sovereignmindradio.com. Join me next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And remember that the power to be a sovereign mind, a free mind, lies within you. Join me.
Here she gone, going away. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me. Children dying every day. But I can't wait to see your face inside my door.